It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening. I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. I am flying solo today. Well, not really. Actually, I do have a co-host. It's not one of my usual co-hosts. It is a very special co-host who I will introduce in a second. I'm going to keep you guessing. I will keep you holding your breath to find out who is co-hosting with me today. It is not Jillian Barbary, who we've had in the past, or Leanne Tweeden, who we've had in the past, or Carrie Kasem, who we've had in the past. No, this is a special show. This is a special Gervie's Law, and I want to thank you for joining us. I'm getting so choked up because it is an important show, and I am going to quickly give you the backstory on this show. So I've done, you know, close to 400 of these shows over the past 9-plus years, and rarely does my wife, Nancy, ever request that my producer, Genevieve Wong, approach someone to be a guest on Gervie's Law. Very rarely does that happen. After all, we've had so many guests on this show from all walks of life. And Nancy, my wife, is not a lawyer, so she doesn't typically interfere with the guest selection. And, you know, she didn't say, you need to get F. Lee Bailey on the show, who, of course, came on the show before he passed away, or Alan Dershowitz, or Gloria Allred, or even some people from the entertainment world like Cindy Crawford and last couple weeks, Suzanne Summers and Jerry Springer. No, Nancy has had nothing to do with those guests. That's all Genevieve. But today, we are featuring a guest, and it's all because of Nancy. So let me give you some more of this backstory. Nancy went back to school. She had studied film at NYU and USC, and then she changed gears very recently, and that was a while back when she studied at NYU and USC. She had two kids, my kids, Hudson and Harper, who I will give you a little hint are staring at me right now. Actually, they're looking at their iPads. They just looked up from their iPads. So it's a family affair today. But Nancy's doing a master's in psychology at Pepperdine University. And one day I'm at the office getting ready for a trial, and I get a text from Nancy. She writes, this book that we're using in my group therapy class is amazing. It's phenomenal. Can you get the authors of The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy on your show? I was really busy that day, so I didn't even think twice. I just forwarded the email to Genevieve Wong, my producer, without any comment. Several weeks later, Genevieve sends me a list of upcoming shows, and it includes Barry Williams from the Brady Bunch. I'm not sure why we're having Barry, but I'm excited to talk to him. I'm a Brady Bunch fan in a few weeks. Alicia Silverstone from Clueless. It included Gloria Allred and Miss Ukraine. Jerry Springer is mentioned. It had L.A. mayoral candidates Kevin DeLeon, Karen Bass, and Mike Feuer. And we'll be doing a show on the mayor race with those leading candidates. Mike Feuer has already been on the show. We're going to have Kevin DeLeon and Karen Bass coming up. And it also included play-by-play man for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, a personal interest of mine, Bob Irving, who retired after 47 years. What a great interview we had with him last week. If you missed Gervie's Law, check out the podcast on our Facebook page or go to Gervie's Law or anywhere where you get your podcast to hear that interview. And on the list was Molin Lesh. I had no idea who that was. So I sent the list to my brother in Toronto because I thought he'd be interested in hearing about Bob Irving, the play-by-play guy for the Bombers, coming on the show. And I get an email back from him, and his comments aren't about Bob Irving. No, he writes to me, who suggested Molin Lesh? And I write back to him, and I say, Nancy. And he says, really? Did you know that Molin is a psychiatrist, a professor in Toronto, and he's originally from Winnipeg, which is our hometown, my brother and I and my family. Wow. Wayman, you can't believe it, can you? You talk about coincidences. So both of us, Molin and me, were the subject of a featured article in the Jewish Post by Jerry Posner. Imagine that. What a coincidence. Molin grew up on a street called Ellis Avenue in Winnipeg, and my dad's drugstore was called Ellis Pharmacy on Ellis Avenue. And the piece to resistance, Molin's wife, Bonnie, is the daughter of the rabbi who officiated at my bar mitzvah. And he officiated at Molin and Bonnie's wedding the same year as my bar mitzvah. Wow. And then another coincidence, my brother-in-law, who is a psychiatrist from Winnipeg and is in Toronto, has been there for many years, Ken Schwartz, both worked at Baycrest, Molin and Kenny, my brother-in-law at Baycrest. What a small world. And so who did I invite to come on the show with me today? Nancy. Hi, Nancy. My wife is going to help me out because I know nothing about group psychotherapy. And we are talking to the guru, or at least one of the gurus, because I know there's two people who wrote the book on it. And Nancy's here to help out.
Hi, good to see you.
I've seen you all day. Anyway.
Well, it is really strange, all the coincidences, after I recommended our guest. And I hope today I will, maybe you'll be a convert to group therapy.
A convert. Is that suggesting that I'm not a fan of group therapy?
Well, I don't think you quite understand it or believe in it. So maybe our guest today will transform you.
So instead of you explaining to me, you got the man to come on and help us out with understanding group therapy. So Molin Lesh is a professor, as I mentioned, of psychiatry, the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Toronto. He was a psychiatrist in chief at Mount Sinai Hospital. He's president of American Group Psychotherapy Association, the PGPA. He lectures and writes about the importance of group psychotherapy and other therapeutic treatments. His publications include the articles and chapters in the New England Journal of Medicine, the American Journal of Psychotherapy, International Journal of Group Psychotherapy. He co-chaired the AGPA's Science to Service Task Force, which is important because it established guidelines for group therapy. He has been teaching for many years, has won a number of teaching awards. And, of course, he wrote the book that I mentioned. It's an important book that people use. It's a seminal textbook on group psychotherapy. I have it right here, actually. Wow, Nancy, you bought this? It's expensive.
Yeah, and I read the whole thing. Can you believe it?
I can't. It's like 5,000 pages. It's called The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy by Irvin Yalom and Molin Lesh. And it's the sixth edition, so you got the most recent. Good for you. Because with respect to that, this sixth edition has some new. Did you know this, Nancy, that it includes new sections throughout, including online group therapy, which we can ask Molin about. Modern analytic and relational approaches, interpersonal neurobiology, measurement-based care, culture and diversity, psychological trauma, and group therapy tailored for a range of clinical populations. And I know you're interested in different clinical populations and how group therapy would work with that. So without further ado, and that's been a lot of ado, welcome to Gervie's Law, Molin Lesh.
Well, thank you so much, Alan, and thank you so much, Nancy. I listened to the list of guests that you've had on recently, and I feel like that Sesame Street scenario of one of these doesn't belong here. But I'm really glad for the opportunity to talk with you and to talk with you, Nancy. Today is the beginning. It's May 1st. It's the beginning of Mental Health Awareness Month. So it's another synchronicity along with all the many others that you've touched on about our Winnipeg group.
That's right. You know, and it's important that you talk about that mental health awareness because it is such an important issue. And I appreciate you coming on today. We have an audience that goes worldwide because of KBC.com. It's focused here in LA, but everything that you work with and you deal with is international. Your seminal book has been translated into many different languages. So I think what we have to talk about today will really cut across any borders, whether it's Canada, United States, or anywhere. And we are going to get started. After this break, we got to take a quick break, and then I'm going to turn it over to Nancy. Well, I don't know if I can or not, but I will try. So we can start talking not only about the shtetl in Winnipeg that Molin and I remember so well, but also, of course, about the importance of group therapy. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
That's right. We are not out of touch, and that's why group therapy is so important, to keep you in touch, keep the community going. And speaking of the community, we're talking to Molin Lesh from my community way back when in Winnipeg. He's in Toronto, and he is one of the authors of The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy, which has been reviewed so well. Some of the reviews include statements like, "The authors of the sixth edition of The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy do an excellent job of presenting the art and science of leading psychotherapy groups. Once again, Yalom and Lesh have hit it out of the park. The breadth and depth of the research covered is truly impressive. The partnership between Yalom and Lesh brings new originality to a text like no other has already shaped the field that it helped to spawn 50 years ago." And those are different reviews. I'm just picking and choosing. Molin, coming from Winnipeg, tell us how your upbringing. I know your parents were Holocaust survivors coming over to North America, probably without much family at all. How did that impact your life's work?
Well, that's an excellent question. I've thought about that a lot. And as you note, Alan and Nancy, my parents were Holocaust survivors. I'm the only member of my family born in Canada. And we grew up in a network. I grew up in a network of other Holocaust survivors without the next generation. So it was the parents, those who were lucky enough to have kids after the war, raised their families in a community. And the sense of the community was critically important in helping with coping, helping with adaptation, helping with support. And we were a group, even before we knew that we were a group, because there wasn't an extended family. And there was also a strong sense of resilience and a sense of trying to engage life fully and meaningfully. So those are, I would say, are two important factors, the sense of community and the principle of engage life fully and meaningfully, because the survivors all were given a second chance that they didn't expect, and they passed that on to many of their children.
So interesting, because as I'm listening to you, Molin, I'm thinking that is something that has been so lost over the years, especially during the pandemic. And as we fight our way through moving forward out of the pandemic, even though it's still obviously impacting our lives, that sense of community seems to have been lost. Nancy, now, and by the way, for those of you just joining, Nancy Gervie, who is my wife, is here to help me out because she's taking psychology classes in a master's program. And Hudson and Harper, our kids, 8 and 9, are sitting on their iPads listening but not really paying attention. Nancy, tell us about how you found the book, The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy, and what questions you have for one of the authors, Molin Lesh.
Hi, Molin. Thanks for coming on.
Hello, Nancy.
I loved reading your book that you wrote with Yalom. And it's interesting because I was in a group therapy. I did some group therapy 3 or 4 years ago before I started my program. And it was a highly structured therapy, group therapy, where we all had about 15 minutes to speak. And I quickly lost interest, and I didn't really understand how group therapy could be effective. And then when I started this program and I was able to take this class, this amazing class, and we read your book, I had a transformative experience in my experiential clinical group where I learned the importance of being in the here and now, working on process, and having an unstructured format, and how meaningful that can be to develop interpersonal relationships. And I try to explain that, what I went through in my group for, it was about 3 months, to Alan and to the average person. And I have a hard time explaining to them without going into all the clinical language. And so I guess my question for you is, how do I share my experience with somebody, or I guess open their mind to why group therapy can be so transformative and beneficial?
Well, you've done a good job, Nancy, actually, of capturing some of the hallmark features of this model of group psychotherapy. We can call it the interpersonal model of group psychotherapy. And probably we should be talking about the group psychotherapies, because there are many different models of group psychotherapy. But one of the hallmark distinctions is the group being used as a way to deliver an intervention, or is it being used as an agent of change? So if it's being used to deliver an intervention, it's like a class. There isn't going to be a lot of interaction. There isn't going to be a lot of feedback. There may be important knowledge transfer, but it's not going to be a rich, emotionally alive experience. That only happens when you make the group the agent of change and focus on people's interaction with one another and the way in which everyone brings themselves genuinely into that group and brings with them all of the relationships that they've had historically and in the moment outside of the group, and it comes alive in the group. And instead of relying on people telling you their story, their history, we rely on people's way of being and relating and interacting with us. That's the here and now. That's the power cell of this kind of group psychotherapy. And it involves an important focus on process. There's an interaction, and then we study the process together in the group through facilitated questioning, through feedback, through learning from one another. What does this mean? Why does this happen in this particular way? So a kind of a process question that I always ask is, why is this happening in this particular way at this particular moment in time? What are the psychological forces that are happening in the group, that are happening in the individual, that are happening between people, that account for why something is happening at a particular moment in time? And let me give you an example, because of how to kind of make it come alive. We've all been to cocktail parties.
Right.
And most people are not big fans of cocktail parties because they lack a kind of authenticity. People are kind of it's a performative experience. People are trying to impress. So let's say you're at a cocktail party and you're talking with someone and you notice that that person is talking to you, but not really making eye contact with you. I haven't been to a cocktail party in a couple of years, but think back pre-COVID.
Yeah, I had that feeling all the time. I talk and no one seems to be listening. Go ahead.
Okay, so stay with that feeling, Alan. Let's say you're in the cocktail party and the person you're talking, they're kind of paying lip service, but you see that they're looking around all around the room, trying to find somebody more interesting, single, more attractive, whatever. What do you do at a cocktail party? At a cocktail party, you say, nice talking with you. I'm going to refresh my drink.
Right.
Okay, how many times have you done that? I know I've done that a ton.
Yeah, and I have other excuses too. It's not only refresh, because if you have a full drink, you know, you have to go to the restroom, or you know, you have to check your messages, or you have to call the home to see how the babysitter's doing. So there's a lot of things you can say to avoid continuing the conversation.
Exactly. Now, if that was a group therapy setting, what you would do is something quite different. You might say to the person who is looking over your shoulder and not making eye contact, you might say something like this. I've noticed that I'm talking, but you seem to be looking elsewhere. Are you aware of how it feels for me to be talking and for you to demonstrate in your behavior that you're not interested in what I have to say? Is that your intention? Is there something that I'm missing, something that I'm doing that is disengaging you? Or is it something that you're wrestling with that leads you to kind of not be present? You can't have that kind of conversation at a cocktail party. If you do, you'll never get invited back.
True.
But that's what happens in group therapy. That is the shift from the content, the description of what's happening, to the processing. And when you do that in group psychotherapy, first you have to have the right environment. It's got to be a safe, cohesive, trusting environment where people are willing to take emotional risks and talk about their apprehensions and their fear and their anxiety or depression or trauma. And then you need to be able to make it come alive so that people get an opportunity to learn about what it is that they do that brings them closer to people or gets in the way of their relationships with people.
I love that example. It's such a great example of the cocktail party, of explaining the difference between real life and what happens in group.
But Nancy, what about if people like me, just, I'm always going in my life. I don't have what it takes to just sit and get in touch with my emotions like you do. And apparently, you know, how Molin's talking about being in the here and now, how do you deal with that when there's people in a group who just aren't on the same page?
So are you saying you don't have time to have authentic experiences with people?
Let's ask Molin. How does, you know, someone like me, how do I get into the moment?
Well, there's got to be something that motivates you. And people don't come into group psychotherapy without high levels of motivation, because it's a difficult, demanding process of treatment. But people are motivated because, especially in our current environment, our current society, people are feeling disconnected. They're feeling isolated. They want stronger, more intimate relationships. That's their motivation. And the group, the evidence is very robust that group therapy helps people enormously at developing the kinds of intimate connections that begins in the group and then transfers outside of the group.
Do you think it can be more effective than individual psychotherapy, or does it have to be done in concert?
It doesn't have to be done in concert. We refer in our textbook to group psychotherapy as a triple E treatment. By that, I mean it is clearly effective. Research shows that time and time again. It is clearly equivalent to individual treatment for most people. And for some people, it's even better than individual therapy, because of the capacity to help reduce isolation, destigmatization, normalization, depathologizing people. And the last E, and I'll come back to another point, the last E is that it is efficient. A lot of people can't afford individual psychotherapy. Group psychotherapy, whether you're paying for it privately in the States or you have third-party insurance that pays for it, is a fraction of the cost of individual therapy. Maybe it costs 30% of what individual therapy would cost. So it's more affordable. And access is critically important in mental health.
Right.
People are struggling, and they can't access the kind of care that they need. So group therapy is effective, and it's equivalent, and it is cost efficient.
So important. We have to take a break at the bottom of the hour. We're talking to Molin Lesh. This is the first day of Mental Health Awareness Month. And what we're talking about is so important for mental health and staying healthy. We appreciate you listening. If you want to call in, I don't know if we'll have time to take your calls. We've had a few calls already. It's 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, we're on the radio. I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with my wife, Nancy Gervey. Hudson and Harper are still here in studio on their iPads, listening carefully about group psychotherapy. And we are talking to the man, one of the two who wrote the book on group psychotherapy. And I will tell you, Molin Lesh, that just like therapy sessions, time goes by so quickly. We only have about 10 minutes more with you. So we want to go through the rapid round. You know, sometimes people are in therapy sessions and they always say, where did the time go? I could talk for another 2 or 3 hours. I'm sure that's the case in group psychotherapy as well. We don't have 2 or 3 hours. So I'm going to turn it over to Nancy. You're in the rapid round. She's going to ask you 3 or 4 quick questions. Let's get the answers out to the best of your abilities in a short period. And I know it's hard to do, and we'll move from there. Here we go. Nancy, the rapid round with the expert, Molin Lesh.
I just had a couple quick questions that I wanted to ask you in regards to your experience doing group therapy with couples and whether that works or doesn't work, whether there are benefits or challenges, or whether anyone does this kind of work. Because I thought it would be an interesting experience. And the other question is...
No, one at a time. We have rules here, Nancy. Don't come in and break them. Dr. Lesh, answer the first question.
I wish we had more time.
I know.
There's so much to say, but I'll try to be quick. Yes, couple group therapy works. It works very effectively because sometimes there issues emerge that the rest of the group sees that are present within the couple that are being denied or discounted in the couple. So there's an opportunity for fuller learning. What Irvi Allen did when he developed group psychotherapy was he elevated the importance of interpersonal learning, interpersonal feedback. We go through life kind of blind about our impact and how people experience us. Group therapy, couple group therapy, individual group therapy, helps people be able to see more fully what it is that they do that gets in their own way.
You know, I have a follow-up quickly because interesting stuff you're talking about, and I know it requires more time, but what about the prospects of couples hearing what other couples are saying and then actually getting angrier because that's not part of their life? For a wife to say, oh, look at how the husband, you know, massages their feet. Wow, you don't do that.
Look, whenever you enter into psychotherapy, there's a risk of some disruption. But you're coming in because you're not happy. And so you want disruption with patterns that aren't working. So you might say, look, that guy responds to his wife in a different way. Could you consider trying to respond to me in that kind of way? This is what it feels like to me. You could ask your husband, what do you see going on between the two of them? You could open up a different kind of a dialogue. The issue here, and Alan, I think you're touching on something that is a resistance that a lot of people have about group therapy. They're afraid of being shamed. They're afraid of being faulted. And you want to create a constructive, safe environment where the opportunity is for learning.
Right.
You go out to a restaurant and you tell the waiter how you want your meal prepared. We don't often have even that level of conversation with our partners about what we look for from them, what matters to us. Group psychotherapy allows us to have more authentic, deeper engagement and connection. And sometimes the most empathic thing you can do for someone is help them understand what it is that they do that gets in their own way with regard to having better, more meaningful connections.
And doing it without a fight and without an argument, without trying to win, all of that stuff that creates even greater anxiety between the couple. I can see what you're saying, that if you can do it in a better environment and more controlled environment, that maybe you will have a lot better progress. Nancy, number two, keep going.
I had a question about doing group therapy with kids, younger kids and also teenagers. Have you had a lot of experience in this area? And do you think it could help develop confidence for kids who have social anxiety and help with communication skills?
100%. That's a very big area of group therapy development. Social skills training, structured cognitive behavior therapy for kids, helping them to develop relational communicational skills. There would be less attention in those kinds of groups on process and more attention on learning skills, trying things out, exposure to things that social anxiety might get in the way of.
Why less on process? I say process, you say process. Why?
Canadian-American.
Is that because they don't have the maturity?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You want to help them build the skills.
And what ages are you, Molan, what ages are you talking about?
I think groups to deal with social anxiety for kids, you can have groups for kids as young as 7, 8, and certainly all the way through adolescence. But you want groups to be more kind of synchronous with regard to age. So you'd have groups for kids in grade 3, grade 4, kids for groups in grade 7 and 8, in grade 7 and 8. Grade 10 and 11, for example.
Okay, so here comes my resistance question again, and I want to thank you. Thank you for pointing it out, because it's important. I'm not the only one who thinks this way, so I appreciate you pointing that out. What about an impact on a kid where they feel like they are being singled out for not being good enough or for losing confidence in a group situation, being labeled as someone who may not be as good as someone else?
They would find in that group that virtually every kid in that group has that feeling.
But what about people who are not in the group? Yeah, I understand that, if they understand that within the group. But the fact that they are in a group, can that impact their confidence in a negative way because others at school who they may look up to are not in groups?
So you're talking about the stigma of being in therapy or group therapy.
Let's hear what I'm talking about. Molan, what am I talking about?
Nancy, you're right. I think that there is a lot of stigma attached to concerns about mental health and pursuing care. We've made big progress in destigmatizing mental illness and pursuit of care. You take a look at all of the sports personalities and the media personalities who have come out and talked about depression and anxiety, the tennis stars, the football players, the basketball players, that normalizes and makes it easier for younger folks and easier for adults to say, you know what, this is part of the human condition. If I had a problem with my foot, I'd see a doctor. I have a problem with my psychology, I'm going to see a mental health professional.
Yeah.
But I want to make an important point here, and that is that quality matters. You have to see people who are well-trained. You have to see people who are invested in learning about their craft and developing it. And that's why you mentioned earlier, I was president of the American Group Psychotherapy Association. There's a local affiliate of the American Group Psychotherapy Association in Los Angeles called the Group Psychotherapy Association of LA, JAPALA. People are committed to learning their craft. They want to be the best they can. They learn, they understand the clinical dilemmas, the kinds of problems, Alan, that you're identifying, recognizing that for many of the patients who need group therapy, groups have not been their friend. Groups have been places where they felt excluded, where they felt marginalized. And we haven't even gotten into, in today's conversation, about issues around diversity and identity and equity and inclusion. Groups are powerful vehicles for repairing racial trauma and the sense of alienation. I don't belong because I'm gay. I don't belong because I'm non-binary. And you find a sense in good, well-run groups, a sense of universality, sense of belonging, a sense of cohesion.
Yeah, such important points. And like you said, we haven't had time to get into it, but certainly cannot be ignored. Last question, Nancy.
Well, I think the last question was more of a question that you had, the geriatric.
Well, so we're going from kids to older people, depression in older people, whether group is effective, either individual therapy. What do you do with older people who are depressed mainly because they're old and not as functional as they used to be?
You mentioned earlier, Alan, about your brother-in-law, Ken Schwartz.
Yeah.
Ken and I both worked, Ken still does,
right,
at Baycrest Center for Geriatric Care. For years, I facilitated groups for seniors, people 70, 80, 90, dealing with issues of isolation and loss. And I remember, like it happened yesterday, this 85-year-old woman who greeted a new person who was just admitted to the group. It was an outpatient group. And the leader of the group, I asked the woman, let's call her Sarah. I said, Sarah, can you welcome Rose, our new member? And Sarah said in her heavily accented voice, she said, Rose, if you're anything like me, you didn't want to be here, and you're only here because your children made you come. But I promise you, this is the best place you can be. And if you do the work here, you're going to leave with a bag of jewels that will help you for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Nothing a therapist could have said to Rose would have had the impact of Sarah's comments. And that's another one of the powers of group.
Amazing.
The peer input. And, you know, patients will say, oh, Dr. Lesh, you're saying that because you're supposed to say that. You're paid to say that. You're a psychiatrist. When a patient says that to another patient in the group, there's a higher level of authenticity and genuineness. It's a lot harder to refute, and it lands in a different way.
What a beautiful way to end our conversation, because when you extrapolate, it isn't just simply limited to the elderly. You can talk about that with kids, with adults, with anyone who has that kind of awareness. What a great way to start out this month, Mental Health Awareness Month. Molin Lesh, a Lantzman. Thank you, Alonzman. Thank you so much for coming on. We have to have you on again so we can ferret out some of these issues. I know Nancy has been glued to the microphone here. Nancy?
Thank you for all of your insight, and we appreciate you. And yes, I wish we had more time and we could talk more.
And Nancy's going to give me what we used to call in Canada the Coles Notes version of the book, The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy. She says it's fantastic. So I'm not going to read 800 pages, but I know people who are interested will. His name is Molin Lesh. Check him out on the internet. There's a lot of other books, the treating the elderly with psychotherapy and others. We appreciate you being here today.
I've enjoyed this immensely. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Nancy.
All right. We have one more segment that we're going to come back to. We have Hudson and Harper sitting here. Maybe we'll get them on the microphone. Who knows? You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, lifting Murphy's Law to the highest level. on AM 790 KABC.
All right, we're back. Harper is looking for headphones. Yes, I have my family here today, Hudson and Harper, and my wife, Nancy. Thank you for co-hosting today, Nancy. Hudson, put your headphones on while Harper's figuring out her headphone situation, which you won't be able to plug in. So why don't you just go back to where you were sitting. Hudson, put the mic in front of your nose, in front of your mouth. How's it going? You got to be right up. You got to eat the microphone. It's like the sucker you were sucking before. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. So you have your baseball playoffs coming up, and you're going to play the Padres for the play-in game because you finished fourth. How do you think you're going to do against the Padres?
We're going to win.
You're going to win. I love that confidence. Just remember we talk about Nike, just do it. That's their slogan. If you get a chance to pitch, which you probably will, you'll probably start that game. What's going to be your strategy to get out the Padres and try and you probably can get in 2 to 3 innings depending on pitch count. And you want to, yesterday you struck out what? 8 out of 9 batters of the 8 out of the 9 outs, right?
Yeah.
And what about the 9th out? Who got that out?
Me.
You? You got to eat the microphone. That's better. So you got a comebacker and you threw it to first and that was the 9th out?
Yeah.
It was a good game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're looking forward to that baseball game?
Mm-hmm.
And what about, what else? You got basketball coming up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about that. What league are you in? The Calabasas League?
Yeah.
Okay. And you haven't been drafted yet, have you? Did you have tryouts?
Yeah.
What did you have to do for the tryout?
Do dribbling and play a practice game.
Yeah. Play a practice game?
Yeah.
And how did you do?
Good.
Did you do great or just good?
Great.
No, you didn't. You were good. You weren't playing your best because you know you want someone to draft you and you didn't want everyone to draft you. So you made sure that you kind of tempered that, right? I'm kidding. You did really great. You got that big rebound and put back. All right. Do you have any question you want to ask Mommy because she's on the microphone for one of the first times? Anything to ask Mommy?
No.
No? You can ask her at home?
Yeah.
All right. Harper.
Yeah?
You got softball playoffs coming up?
Yeah.
Now, you play on Tuesday, I think.
Yeah.
Who do you play against?
I don't really know.
Yeah, we don't know yet, do we? You lost your first playoff round, so now you're on the consolation side? It's kind of depressing talk here, you know. We're talking with fourth place finish for Hudson, but you've got confidence that you're going to get through the playoffs, right? Yeah, you got to be right on the mic. There. Bring the mic down. Can you push it down? No, the mic part, not the stand. Yeah, pull that down. There. All right. And Harper, you finished about fourth place too, so you lost your first round. You have to win to keep going or you're out. Now, are you both going to play All-Stars this year?
Yeah, I'm going to play All-Stars.
Yeah. What position do you think you'll play?
Pitcher.
And what else?
Shortstop.
Harper, what about you?
I'll probably play second base and maybe pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, you're both going to be all-stars, so congratulations on a great season. Nancy, you got anything to ask them before? Maybe they'll do a little song, but what do you want to ask your kids?
Well, I'm hoping maybe they'll sing because I know Harper sang beautifully on your show a few weeks ago.
Yes, she did.
So
I was babysitting at the time because you were at the Clippers game they were knocked out. Hudson, you went to the Clippers game with Mom?
Yeah.
And Harper sang from The Wizard of Oz.
So maybe will you sing again for us?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. What do we have to do? Hudson,
that's,
you know,
her favorite word.
Maybe. We were talking today about negotiating. Hudson wants to be a general manager of a sports team, and he's been working a lot on his iPad, making deals for the basketball league, right?
Yeah.
And you were telling me, you know, your salary cap, and, you know, he's 9 years old and he's already working on salary caps and how to put a team together. So tell us about, you know, these negotiations. What do we have to do to both of you to get you sing? You have like 30 seconds before we have to get you singing. What do you want?
I don't want to sing.
Okay. What about you, Harper?
Mommy promised me the Barbie doll at Target.
Barbie doll at Target. Okay. Hudson, you want to go to Disneyland? Will you sing for Disneyland?
No.
What will you sing for?
Nothing.
Nothing. All right. We're going to start the song right now. As we start the ending of the show, you guys are going to take us out. Harper, what song are you doing?
I'm going to do Rainbow Connection.
Okay.
Oh, it's my favorite.
Hudson, do you want to go over there? She's got it set up. Can you just go over there and help out?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't want to sing.
Do you want to sing a different? You want to sing America the Beautiful? You did a great rendition.
I don't want to sing.
You're an amazing singer. You are an amazing singer. You don't want to do it?
No.
All right. I guess no Disneyland for you. Harper, go for it.
Okay. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. And rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Who said that every wish would be heard and answered when wished on the morning star? Somebody thought of that, and someone believed it. Look what it's done so far. What's so amazing that keeps us stargazing? And what do we think we might see? Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
And me.
All of us under the spell. We know that it's probably magic.
Thank you, Harper. Thank you so much. We've got to end it. Hudson, you got to take us out. We got 15 seconds. Thanks for being here. Nancy, Harper, it's beautiful. We love it. Thank you. Hudson, you got to say thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Hudson Gervie. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Hudson. See you next week.